Welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast, where we dive into the many aspects, challenges, and life-changing lessons that are part of our spiritual awakenings. Through conversations, we are looking to bring you wisdom and perspectives so that you feel more supported and connected as you navigate your own awakening path. We are your hosts, Kate McGee and Amanda Richardson-Meyer. We've both been through our own unique awakening journeys that have changed and transformed our lives. And through these awakening conversations, we will be growing and expanding alongside you. We're so glad to have you join us. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Awakening Conversations podcast. My name is Kate. I'm here with my co-host Amanda. And today we're being joined by Kirsten McCormick. Kirsten is a musician turned youth advocate and a mother of five from Texas who is revolutionizing teen experiences. After traveling with her family in a converted school bus and relocating to Mexico during the pandemic, she founded Teen Connect. This innovative program focuses on real-world connections and community building for teenagers. Now she is expanding her vision with Teen Connect Adventure Camps, bringing U.S. teens to Central Mexico for transformative, unplugged experiences that build confidence and foster genuine connections. Kirsten, welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
We're really excited to learn about your journey and the work that you're doing. And from reading the short bio that you sent us and then also discovering a little bit more about your story, it has been an unconventional path in life, but I think one that really is a path that exemplifies and really shows us that we can create our own reality, and we can also create a world that we wish to see and do work that we feel is really purposeful and meaningful in the world. And I'm excited to share what you do with everyone. To begin, let's start at the start. How has this journey unfolded for you? Do you want to share with us a little bit about your background, the journey you went on, and how that kind of led you to become interested in working with teens?
Sure. So I've worked with teens my whole life in various different capacities. When I was a teenager, I became a water safety instructor with the Red Cross. So I taught swimming lessons, but after a couple of summers, I took over directing the program. And so at age 19 and 20, I was supervising 15 and 16 year old lifeguards and swimming instructors. And I directed a summer camp when I was 19, and again, was supervising teenage staff that was younger than myself. And so from a fairly young age, I worked with teenagers. And then I went on to get my degree in music and then taught voice lessons and choir. And so just in different capacities, I've worked with teenagers my whole life. And more recently, we traveled full-time in a converted school bus around the U.S. and ended up back in Texas. And then after the pandemic hit, we ended up coming to Mexico. And it was sort of out of necessity for my own teenagers that I started Teen Connect, because we got here and I realized that if I really, really loved it here, and if I wanted to stay here, I needed everyone in the family to be happy. And it only took about a month of the kids being here before they were like, "We miss our friends. We want to go back." And I was like, "Well, you weren't seeing your friends anyway when we were in Texas." Like, everything was all shut down. And so I decided that I needed to see what other teenagers were here. No one was going to school at the time. There were no activities whatsoever happening. And so I reached out on Facebook in some of the San Miguel expat groups and the San Miguel kids group. And I was just like, who has teenagers? My kids need to be around other teens. Like, they can't stay in their room staring at their computers and getting on Zoom calls and gaming the whole time like that. This is not sustainable or good for their mental health. And so we started off with a meeting that had eight kids, and we were all at a local coffee shop, and we just sat in a circle of chairs and awkwardly played icebreaker games. But I think for a lot of the kids, it was the first time in the last like 9 or 10 months since the pandemic had started that they were actually in person with other teenagers. So no matter how awkward it may seem to them, they were so desperate for interaction with their peers that they came and they kept coming. And we really were able to create something special out of that first awkward group. And I made a commitment for my own kids that I'll show up and organize some sort of activity every week so that my kids could make friends. And to me, seeing the difference in their moods, their attitudes, their behaviors, just getting to be in person, face to face, it was hugely transforming for them. And it really solidified my belief that all human beings, but especially teenagers, need in-person, face-to-face connection with other people, with their people. And we all need it, but I think it's really actually crucial to their development. I think adults can go for slightly longer periods without that, because they remember what it's like, but they're at such a crucial, rapid stage of development that in order for them to have healthy social emotional development, they need to be in person with their peers. And so seeing them come out of the pandemic and face that kind of solidified that belief for me. And now we're sort of on the other side of the pandemic, and you know, the world is open and things are happening again. But in a way, I feel like this is still incredibly important, because we're also in an era where teenagers are constantly glued to their phone screens or to their gaming devices, and that is, rather than being inflicted from the outside, that is inflicted just through what is now normal and habitual in most of their lives. And so the reason I continue to work on this project is because I think it's just as needed now, if not more than ever.
So for those of you listening, Kirsten and I, we live in the same city, and I've been beneficially impacted by what she's created here. And it's pretty remarkable to see how it continues to grow. And I will echo that as far as I was looking for my daughter for more community, and then I didn't realize how much I needed it as well. And so it's like the whole, you've created a space where the whole family, the parents are friends. And so I think in a world of, like you said, of connectivity with our devices, being able to have these real world experiences, I didn't have these connections in the United States. I was, you know, kind of in my own little bubble. And so thank you for that. And as far as, you know, it's now like 4 years later, right? Since you started Team Connect, like, can you share with people how this has evolved and grown and expanded? Like, what else since that coffee shop meeting, how has it grown?
Yeah, so we started off the first year, we started off with just some sort of weekly social event. We'd get together and play games or have a movie night or do hikes, anything that the kids were interested in doing. Once a week, we would get together and do it. And it was basically just weekly social events for the first year. And in the first year, we grew from like 8 kids to 40 kids. And then in the second year, we grew to like 80 kids. And it got to the point where it was just like bigger than I had ever anticipated. And so we started seeing what else the kids were interested in. My background is in music and theater. And so a year and a half ago, I decided to offer a musical theater summer camp. And it was so well received that we're like, well, let's keep doing this during the year. And so that kind of grew into offering a musical theater club throughout the year, where basically it's a sort of a semester of classes and rehearsals that lead into a final performance, which is really fun for the kids and a hugely beneficial experience. But not all kids are into theater. So we wanted to continue the weekly socials and offer other types of classes. So we've done like language exchange clubs, cooking classes, baking classes, dance classes. Amanda offered a photography class. Basically anything we think the kids might be interested in, positive things we can expose them to that maybe they weren't interested in before, but once they try it, they're interested in. We offer a lot of different extracurriculars that are sort of contributed to by members of the community, parents or other adults who are interested in working with teenagers. And so now it's sort of a myriad of different types of projects and classes and clubs along with the social activities. And then the other side of this project for me is that I have for the last few years also been leading adult adventure trips here in central Mexico to cool locations out in the mountains and hot springs and waterfalls and to see the butterflies. And there's just a lot of really rich opportunities in central Mexico. But I really find most of my purpose and meaning in working with teens. And so I started taking our local kids out on camping trips and short adventure trips. And I was like, this is what I really like. Like this is my sweet spot, getting out to travel and do these adventures, but with the teenagers, because it's fun going with retirees and adults, which is sort of the target demographic for the adventure trips, but it's way more satisfying for me to go with the teens. And so now our newest project is launching Teen Connect Adventures. And the idea is that our kids here already have this really, really rich, culturally immersive community, and they have the opportunity to have these adventures all the time. And the idea is to offer this to kids from the U.S. or other countries who want to come here for an adventure camp experience and unplug, get off the devices, and come have such an amazing and connecting adventure where they're connecting with themselves and other people and being out in nature that they don't even miss their phones, that they really truly get a detox, but in the best possible way, not in like a, oh, you're a trouble kid, so therefore let's unplug you and take away your devices and punish you, but let's give you something that's so fun to do that you don't even care that you're not on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So that's the idea, is to bring kids and give them just this really, really rich, amazing experience.
I absolutely love that. I can never remember this guy's name. There is a gentleman, I think he's American, could be British, but he is very vocal at the moment about teenagers on their devices and promoting programs within schools to help them come up with regulations where, you know, phones aren't allowed in classrooms, taking kids to have these experiences where they go somewhere on camps for a week, device free, and then really trying to show the benefits these children have, interviewing them and things like that. And something that you said, you know, not just taking the device away to say, try it for a week and like, how do you go, but showing them what else there is, right? Like when we are engaging with other people, when we're going to have new experiences, how they feel, how they can come alive, how they can be totally not thinking about their phone or Instagram because they're actually connecting with humans. And one of the studies he did while the kids went on this camp, they said, we were really bored and like had these withdrawal symptoms from not having my phone for the first few days. You know, once they got into the swing of not being on the phone, like their creativity came back up, their sense of imagination, their problem solving skills, because, you know, they don't have something to take their attention. They had to come up with ideas. What would you say are some of the things that you're seeing through, have you started doing these camps, first of all, if not just speaking from your experience of the kids getting connected, what are the benefits you're really seeing come through in the children that you're working with, getting them into these, like creating connection and community, and perhaps through those adventure camps?
Right. So the full length adventure camps are launching in 2025, but we've done enough of the shorter adventures and enough of the different projects and activities with teenagers that I can say that without a shadow of a doubt, there is a short detox period when kids at first can't have their phones or aren't gaming or whatever. And it's similar to with adults, like where the first day constantly sort of like, Oh yeah. It like reaching, you know, reaching to check something. Oh no, we can't. But then in general, they're happier. They feel happier. They feel a little more relaxed, and the desire to engage. It's pretty much exactly what you said, that man recorded, is the desire to engage and connect with the people around you is stronger. Connecting with people in person versus through some digital means is very much a nourishing experience. And one of my favorite comparisons is like if someone is used to eating junk and fast food, you crave it and you can know in your head that it's not good for you, but it's easy, it's satisfying and tasty, and it's what your body is accustomed to. But if you stop eating that and you start giving your body real good, wholesome, nourishing food, then your body responds like, wow, like I feel so much better. I have so much energy. I feel more alert. I don't have brain fog. And then you go back to the junk food, and in comparison, it's like, oh, gross. You wouldn't have thought that before. And I think that teenagers and human beings in general experience the same thing when their primary means of connecting with people is digital. And then suddenly they're in an immersive experience where they have all of this real good, satisfying, nourishing, soul connecting time with other people, then suddenly the shallow version of connection that they get through connecting digitally just doesn't feel as good. And they can make that connection. We don't have to tell them like, look at the difference. Aren't you so much happier? They're like, wow, I feel so much better. Like the connections and the friendships they make are deeper. You know, a few in-person friends go so much further to making one feel satisfied and loved and affirmed and connected than 100 or 500 social media friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I've noticed that as well. I've observed that. And something else that I think that you are paying a lot of attention to and emphasizing in your work is helping our kids to be more resilient, to develop independence. And, you know, people can think about, you know, where I'm a millennial. I think you're a millennial, Kirsten. Are you Gen X, Kate, or a millennial?
I don't know what they are, but I'm 79 born. So whatever that means.
We're all in the same like generation. But as far as like when we were kids, we were able to go out and play for hours at a time, you know. I remember walking home at 5, 6 from the bus stop, and our kids are growing up in a very different era. And so something that I know you have talked about is the importance for us helping them to develop this sense of independence that they're not getting if they're on devices all the time and we're scared to let them out of the house. And that's something that I think through these adventure camps and also through the other activities that you facilitate and offer, they are getting. Can you speak to that and what you've observed and the importance of helping them become more independent?
Yeah. So when my two older boys were little, I read a book called Free Range Kids by, I think it's Lenore Skenazy. And it really highlighted that concept, the concept that kids need a lot of free range, unsupervised play, and they need lots of responsibility that is actually meaningful and important. And that over the last 20-ish years, parenting trends have gone in the direction of caring for kids and keeping them safe to the detriment of them developing that sense of independence and the responsibility that that sort of goes hand in hand. So it became there was a lot of, in the late 90s, there was a bunch of news stories that came of kids getting abducted or kidnapped. And these sort of like these stories, this handful of stories spread like wildfire. And so suddenly it's like not safe to let your kids play outside in the front yard anymore, or to ride their bikes out, or to go to the park by themselves, or to walk home by themselves. You know, that was irresponsible parenting. And it's gotten to the point where, you know, if kids are playing alone in their front yard, parents in the US can have CPS called on them. You know, that too, and that is considered abusive parenting, whereas that used to be simply normal daily life. You'd go outside, you'd play till it got dark, and you came home. So, in some ways, people are like, oh, things are so much safer now. But what they don't realize, or what's not commonly realized, is that kids really, really need a certain amount of independence in order to have healthy development and to develop the confidence they need to bit by bit transition into adulthood. Because now you've got kids who are in their late teens who never get left alone, or if they are left alone, they're in their house, you know, all the doors locked and they're not allowed to go anywhere or do anything. And they're not actually able to practice good, healthy, age-appropriate independent skills. You know, it is age-appropriate for teenagers to be able to leave their house, walk to the store, buy some things for the family, to bring them back. It's age-appropriate for them to babysit younger siblings or cousins. It's age-appropriate for kids to learn how to cook a meal by themselves or to run an errand. And a lot of kids do not get to experience these things anymore. And then we wonder why, without these confidence, responsibility building activities, we have these young adults who have anxiety and don't know how to do anything for themselves, because suddenly they reach young adulthood and we're like, well, go out and get a job, you know, go apply for college. And they've literally not been given the sort of stair step skills they need to get to the point where they can confidently do those kinds of things on their own. So we sort of socially and emotionally cripple our kids by overprotecting them. It's the equivalent of never letting a baby practice walking and then wondering why they can't get around. It's a very similar thing. And so I'm just a big proponent of giving kids age-appropriate independence and responsibility, and parents learning to relax and let them take appropriate risks. And that can be scary, because nobody wants to put their kids in any kind of danger, but risk is part of life. And that's the only way they will gain the skills they need in adulthood.
Yeah, I, as you said all of that, I can remember being, I think, under the age of 10 and going to the local shop on my bike for an errand for my mum. It felt like a really long distance. It may not have been, but it was far. And I did it on my own, and like had the coins in my hand and the counter was above my head and I had to ask the lady for something. And, you know, I mean, that definitely fosters that sense of independence and like achievement, and that I can do hard things. I think, you know, that's what you're really speaking to, is giving kids these opportunities to, you know, feel uncomfortable as well, to then face that discomfort in doing something that then they can see that they can. It is that, you know, in your sense of self, you're like, okay, I can see it. When I look back on myself, like, as I said, that was always sort of something I was given to do, like tasks like that. And then I think of a cousin of mine who, even as teenagers, we'd go somewhere, but she was always saying like, you go to the counter and buy the thing, you ask the person. She was too afraid to do that. And so, you know, being able to like ask questions of a stranger, or, you know, ask for directions and not have that fear of reaching out to people as well, you know, I would say independence is one of the things that I've definitely was able to develop through that, not necessarily feeling confident in who I am, but having the confidence to ask. And, you know, it is such a valuable skill, because as I've gotten older, I was able to make the choices to leave home and like move towns. And, you know, it's been a catalyst for my life of, you know, facing my fears and facing my edges and constantly knowing that, yes, sometimes things feel uncomfortable, but that doesn't mean it's something I should shy away from or avoid. So I think, as you're saying, it's such an important part of the child's development to face risk and have to, you know, within themselves calculate, what should I do? Aligning to their morals that families are able to teach them about what's right and wrong for me. You know, it's, yeah, powerful place for parents to really help kids become the best of who they can be.
Yeah. And I think it's also important, like, as you were saying that, I was thinking about the fact that there has to be an opportunity for kids to fail at some things. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of times parents want to protect their kids from failure at all cost. And how important is it for us to sometimes fail and realize, like, oh, look, it's not the end of the world. And on the other side of failure is you get up and you dust yourself off and you try something else. Learning, like, you only learn through failure that failure is not the end of the world. And that it's just an opportunity to learn to do something a different way or to try a different strategy. And if kids never have the opportunity to fail, then they develop really big fear and anxiety around the, what if I fail? And to be able to face the opportunities to fail and to fail at some stuff. Like, obviously we don't want that for them, but I think it's actually super important for development for them to actually fail and see what that feels like and be like, huh, well, still here. Like, I survive. You know, most failures are not life-threatening. They just, you know, they might hurt our ego a little bit. But we often learn more from our failures than from our successes. And I think that's another thing that the modern parent doesn't allow their kids to, they try to protect them from that at all costs. And I think that that's a huge mistake developmentally.
How much do you think, thinking about it, as far as parents go, are parents projecting, like, their kids making a mistake is actually a mistake on them making a mistake, right? And so in order to not feel that discomfort as a parent, maybe the parent didn't learn how to make mistakes and therefore, I don't want my kid to make mistakes either.
Yeah. I think there's part of that, and or if making mistakes was something punishable in their own childhood, if them making a mistake, say getting a bad grade or really any kind of mistake, if it was something that in their own childhood that they would have faced some sort of really severe consequence for, then something that the parents are then projecting, I'm never going to make my kids go through that. Or they're trying to parent exactly like their parents did and you better not make a mistake or else.
Either it's like either highly critical or judgmental, and that's because that's what they learned from
or overprotected bubble wrap.
Yeah. And so from that, I feel you have created a space, a container where kids can be kids. And I think, you know, it's something that's really cool. It's like your oldest son, like, you created this container for him to start this cafe in your house. And it's like setting up our kids to try things, to experiment, to be like, have this entrepreneurial spirit where they can, like, under the protection, under the safety of their parents' roof, they can try these things, see what it's like, see if they like it. A lot of trial and error. And through that process, you know, they're not on their own as far as needing to fend for themselves. And so how much can they learn in that safe container while us, like, gently pushing them to try and be better, you know, go after the things that we're interested in and curious about. And, you know, nudging them along, but also allowing them to not having so much pressure that, you know, if they make a mistake, that they're going to, you know, they either don't want to or they'll feel super crushed if they do. They can have that full experience. And I see that's what you do with both the clubs and the events but also the musical theater, right? Like, that is to see all these kids get up on stage and, you know, they come in, none of them really know their lines or songs at the beginning. Maybe their pitch is off at the beginning, and you, like, work with them and, like, shape them into this really, it's remarkable to see them transform and the sense of accomplishment that they have through this process, and also the teamwork. Like, there's so many amazing things that I see them receiving from these experiences. So yeah, I think the containers that I've seen you create allow for those mistakes to happen, for them to experiment, to them to really see who they are. And it's like, you know, you can be tough on them, but it's in such a loving way because you just want to see them succeed. And I see that they feel that. And so, yeah, it's very special, I think, for kids to have, especially in the teen age group, when they have their peer group, but to have adults other than their parents to feel safe with. That's very important. And yeah, what do you feel as far as that mentor role, as that kind of authority, but also, but you do it in a way where they feel safe? Like what, how do you feel your role is? Like, how do you perceive that role that you play for them?
I think one of the biggest gifts I can give any teen is to see them as individuals and never let myself label them or get, like, see a kid. It's really, really easy with teenagers to see, like, oh, that's the rebellious kid, or that's the hyperactive kid, or whatever. It's really, really easy. And I saw this when I worked in schools. I saw this happen with a lot of teachers, or with parents of, parents would say this about other people's kids, where basically a kid would get labeled, and then no matter how much they grew or mature or changed, they never could escape that label. And they ended up growing into or having to live out whatever they were labeled at. And I think that teenagers are constantly growing and changing. And a lot of times the person they are now is not the same person they're going to be a year from now. Not that they don't change personalities entirely, but they just grow in such rapid leaps and bounds that it's really, really important to see them as individuals. And so that's one of the gifts I can give them, is to see them as an individual and really see their growth and where they're making improvements, which allows me to have the relationship with them to call them out if they're being like sassy or inappropriate or whatever. I don't label them that. Like if they're acting inappropriately one day, I'm not going to assume that that's their entire personality. And in a lot of situations, kids do sort of like get labeled and they aren't allowed to change because the people around them, the adults in their life, just keep them boxed in by whatever label they got. And so one of the delights, one of my favorite things is watching how much a kid can grow in a semester or a year, and looking back at when I first met them or what they were like at the beginning of the year, and just being like, wow, look at you. Like, look how much you've changed and grown and matured. And I really, really love to see the potential in kids and pull it out of them. I think that I know that for me, that was hugely transformative, you know, in my teen and college age years, having certain teachers or adults who saw potential in me before I saw it in myself and pulled it out. And so that's a gift that I try to give to kids. Like, ultimately that's something all adults can do, but it's not a priority for everybody to do that. So my goal is to just always see people as people, not just kids, but to see them as people and individuals that are capable of growth and change.
So Kirsten, I'm curious, you mentioned there that, you know, through your own experiences through school and college, that you had teachers who were able to see the potential in you and bring that forward. And so that's been part of your journey to help you be who you are, doing what you're doing. What I'm curious about is, like, as you've gone through your own life's journey, are there other things that you were working on or anything that you had to sort of to work on in yourself, heal, reprogram through your own upbringing to help you kind of step into this role that you're in today, to be the mother that you are, to be the, you know, community member that you are, working with teens, holding this kind of space? Because it sounds like an incredible offering you're really giving kids, to see them who they are. Has it always been that way for you, or has there been a journey of you really stepping into this role yourself?
I think it's definitely been a growth process. I was raised in a family and environment that was very much like, we know what is right and the way things should be, and if someone doesn't agree with us, then we have to show them the light. We have a responsibility in the world to help show people the truth, which I took into adulthood in pretty much every facet. Like, if I believed something was good or right, then I needed to convince everyone around me of that. And so that could be how, in ways of like how to parent or nutrition or like really any facet of something that I cared about. I felt like if I heard someone that didn't agree with me, I felt the need to change their minds. And at some point in my 30s, probably, especially when, I was in a lot of different mom groups on Facebook, and I would see people arguing over, like, having these great online debates, and just realizing, like, nobody's ever actually changing each other's minds. And even if you do, which I never really saw happen, like, it's only the only influence we really have is over those we have built relationship with. Like, a stranger is never going to change someone's mind online. You can shout and argue and spew your opinions as much as you want, but unless there is trust built, you're not going to. And even if there's trust built, you can destroy trust by inserting your opinion where it is not asked for. And so it became for me, there's a few years where I would see something or have the urge to insert my opinion and then be like, what happens if I don't? Like, what's the worst that happens if I just let this person continue having the opinion they have? And the world didn't end. And things went on, and I had less conflict and less stress by just like letting it go. And that led me to then observe in other people the same thing. Like, wow, a lot of things that people are the most stressed out about are when they're trying to insert themselves in or control the behaviors and opinions of others. And I just think that the vast majority of the time, that's completely unnecessary. And that if someone is at the point in their life when they are ready to learn new information or ready to be awakened to an idea, then they will be. And if I happen to be there and happen to be the person that they decide to ask my opinion, great. But most of the time, people will receive and find the information they need on their own. And that it's not my job to change anyone's mind about anything. And I think taking that into the work I do with teenagers is really important. I do think one difference with kids is that they are open, fertile soil for teaching. But I think it's really, really important to, again, wait for the information to be solicited. You know, if kids want to learn something, they will ask, and then they will be open-minded about it. Anytime we as human beings are forcing our opinions on other people, I don't find it helpful. But that was that took several years of unprogramming to get to the point where I realized how much more at peace my life was without the need to convince anyone of anything.
I find that really fascinating because in this time that we're in where it feels, especially in the country we come from, in terms of the division that exists and people are on one side or another of an issue or a political candidate or whatever. And I don't see you playing in that energy with how you live your life. And from a larger perspective, I think we create something new when we're not playing in that divisive energy and we're focused on what we want to create. And so I don't think you could create what you've created if you were getting involved with divisive energy as opposed to trying to bring people together, and which allows people to see that they have more commonalities than they have differences. And how do we have conflict resolution? How do we not try to push our beliefs and our opinions upon other people? And so, like, that's what I see as far as our way forward in the world is by focusing on what we want to create rather than focusing on what's wrong with the world. And so, yeah, I'd say that that exemplifies, you're an example of like, how do we create something, the things that are, we're lacking, right? Like you made a choice to move your family and there was a need for community for your kids. And so, okay, rather than complain about what's not here, you created it. And is that something that, do you think you've always been that way? Or is that something you've cultivated along the way? Or what would you say in terms of like creating the things that you want to see?
I think all of us have tendencies towards, I think I do have a tendency towards creatively sort of like manifesting the things that I want to see. But one person that was really, really influential in my own sort of like journey and development to operate in the world the way I do right now is there is a really amazing woman. Her name is Zen Cryer DeBrook. And I took some courses by her in the year or two before the pandemic. She does a really good job of teaching people how to sort of like, she calls it use your inner guidance system. So some people might call that tapping into your intuition or whatever, but she explains and teaches these concepts in a really simple, down to earth way. And I'm a very simple, down to earth person. I don't get like, I like the idea of a lot of this woo woo stuff, but I really need things to be like simple and applicable to me right here, right now. Cause I don't have the patience to like meditate for hours and hours and figure it out. Like I need to be really applicable. And through the things that I practiced when I took some of her courses is I have a couple of filters that I sort of run any of my decisions through. And one of them is I only do things or follow things that I find opening versus like constricting. And I sort of filter things through, is this decision being made out of fear or out of love? And another one, especially when it comes to community, is this decision bringing people together or is it divisive? And so when I run things through those two filters, I am left with decisions that feel good for me and for the group versus I've never made a good decision based out of fear. And I've never made a good decision that was divisive. Not to say that I don't have boundaries, because I do have boundaries, but there's a difference between having personal boundaries and choosing things that are divisive in nature.
I want to ask you a question, just to expand on what you said there. We have guests fill out a form when they come on, and something that you wrote in yours was, every year of my life, I feel more grounded in myself. And I wanted to know, what is it that you're doing in your life that helps you feel that year on year? Is it you really allowing yourself to align your choices in life, as you just said, through those filters? Is that what helps you feel more grounded? Is it living this authentic expression that you're living? Is it being able to create the way that you create? What are you doing? What have you been doing that really helps you live your life in such a way that you're becoming more and more grounded every year?
I think that every year, every day, I'm constantly filtering out, like, I don't believe in have to's and shoulds. I think that those are red flags, and that when we say, I should do this or I have to do this, that's usually programming talking, and that the things that are part of our journey and our life's purpose and in alignment, we are drawn to. And so every year I reassess the things that I'm doing. And if it's not like bringing life, if it's not bringing life and satisfaction and joy, then I cut it out and I don't do it anymore. And sometimes I find myself in something that I thought was going to, and then it ends up like last year, for instance, I took over like administrating a theater for a few months, and in beforehand I was like, oh, that sounds really fun. It's going to be cool. And it only took a few months of doing it for me to be like, not cool, not fun, a lot of work. Nope, this is not for me. And so I've gotten better and better at more quickly dropping the things that are draining and recognizing which things are like life-giving to me. And so even though I stay pretty busy, I am usually staying busy with things that bring me a lot of joy and satisfaction and that fuel me. And I think the more we do the things that fuel us and feel good, the more we figure out about ourselves. And I think that especially, I can't speak for men because I'm not a man, but especially for women, we get to a point in our life where we're done playing games and playing by the rules of society and the programming, and we get to the point where we're like, no, I think I figured out like what makes me tick. And then if you start to operate within that reality, it's juicy, it's satisfying, and life is more fun. But I think it's really important for those of us that have sort of like woken up to that reality to live it out loud. And again, this isn't about changing other people's minds, but it's about so that people who are still sort of trapped in a cycle or in a box or are not happy, the more of us that are living out our best lives and our purposes and setting that example, the more they're like, oh, wait, there's more that's possible. I think I believe way more in just sort of like be a living example of the kind of change or goodness that you want to see more of in the world. Because I feel like that makes a way, way bigger difference than any words that we could ever say to try and convince people.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Kirsten, so a lot of people talk about how the kids that are, have the kids right now are more intuitive, more aware, more sensitive than, say, our generation. I'm wondering, from your experience, do you observe that? And also, imagine you're always learning from the kids, but what are some of the big lessons that both your kids and the kids that you've worked with, what have they shown you, taught you, helped you become more aware of about yourself?
Ooh, I think that part of my, I don't know if it's my programming or just some of my natural tendencies and personalities or a combination of both, is I grew up with a lot of, I feel like toxic positivity is too strong of a word, but positivity to the point where positive equals good and sadness or any kind of negative emotions equal bad. And one of the things that I have learned, and I think especially from my daughter, who is a more melancholy soul than I am, is that the sad emotions or sometimes the angry emotions, these are not bad. They're part of the full spectrum of the human experience. And so she's really taught me to be okay with those and to sometimes when she's in a mood where she just needs to be with her sort of like big, heavy feelings that it used to, well, no, it still does, but I'm getting better at being with them. It makes me uncomfortable because I want everyone to be happy and okay and feel good all the time. And what I've learned from her is that sometimes she just needs to be in those feelings for a while. And she needs me to be in those feelings with her and just be present with them and to feel them. And then we can move through them and go to some other parts of the spectrum of emotions. But I used to put a lot of energy into trying to fix and change and improve her emotions rather than just sort of like riding that wave with her. And that has been really, really healthy for me, because then when big emotions come up for myself, it reminds me that it's okay to be with them and big sad or big angry or big grief or whatever it is needs to be processed and it needs to be experienced. And that's not something I think I would have chosen to face on my own. And it was only through the necessity of connecting with my daughter that I was willing to go into those spaces. And it's still not easy for me. That's an ongoing challenge that I'm really determined to keep challenging myself with, because I have five kids, but I only have one daughter, and it's really, really important to me to maintain connection with her and show up where she needs me, where and how she needs me to show up. And I don't think it's an accident that I was gifted this particular human to come and do life with, because she's not an easy person for me to do life with, but I really love her a lot, and we have a lot to teach each other. And I have a lot to learn from her.
I relate to that as also having a melancholic daughter and realizing that that's what she's here to teach me too. So yeah, I can relate.
I just want to say that's really beautiful. But as you said that, like, you know, her journey might be coming in with that melancholy, but she has the mom who, you know, radiates. I mean, I have never met you in person, but I would look forward to the experience of that human connection, because I'm sure it's a powerful radiation of warmth and, you know, openness and inclusivity and like joy. So you're a gift to each other in that sense that, you know, she's here with her innate experience in the melancholy, but she's also chosen the mom to hold that space for her and show her, you know, just the sunshine of it all as well. So it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's definitely not an accident that we're here sharing this life together.
I've got one more question. The adventure camps are coming up 2025, and really that's bringing teens from the US and then other countries out of those environments into a completely different one, to have some amazing experiences to help them connect and really, I think, connect with themselves in a new way, people in a new way, and life in a new way. And I know that travel has been part of your journey, obviously. How many years were you in the school bus, and then you came to Mexico? Can you just speak to what travel has done for you in terms of opening you up, your awakening, seeing the programming in life, and how really travel is such a powerful conduit for adults and children in knowing themselves and connecting with life?
That's a really, really good question. So my travels started when I was a teenager, which is part of the reason of the inspiration for this. I went on some service trips when I was a teenager. I did one to far northern Canada to a Native American reserve. And then I went to and spent a summer in the Philippines, kind of on a remote island doing construction work. And for me, those early travel experiences were hugely transformative. I thought when I was going, like, I'm going to do this work and make a difference in the world, which maybe I did. I don't know how long lasting the impacts of the construction work I did were. But what really was happening is that every teen on those service trips was being irreversibly transformed for the good, because we were taken out of our comfort zones. We were seeing other peoples in other cultures, how they live, how very, very different it was from our sort of like sheltered, comfortable, padded lives. And we were in uncomfortable situations out, you know, doing 8 hours of heavy construction, often in the rain, during monsoon season, and sleeping in tents and getting mosquito bit. And yet I loved it. Those were some of my favorite, those are some of my favorite adolescent memories is really getting out, and just the amount of confidence that was built, the deep friendships that I made on those trips. It was truly life-changing and I think really formed part of the fabric of who I am. And so I definitely, those are in my mind as I'm, you know, planning out and organizing the trips that I do for the teenagers that I get to have the pleasure of working with. But even throughout my adult life, I just think that every time anyone travels, especially getting out of their own culture and is exposed, it teaches us to be more empathetic, more understanding. We become citizens of the world and not just of the city, town, or state that we grew up in. We gain a global perspective, and it makes us view things in a way that you never can just from staying in one place and reading a book or learning about events online. It allows you to truly see from a more of a bird's eye view on what's happening in the world and what our place in the world is. And I think it's part of a well-rounded education that is critical to being a well-rounded adult. And I also recognize it's a privilege to be able to travel. But if someone has that ability and has that privilege, I think we sort of have a responsibility to take advantage of it and educate ourselves as much as possible.
It's almost like it's a missing key, I think, to, you know, where, as you said, where there's the opportunity and the potential, if a child's able to experience that, like, I think it is getting to leave. I think I went on a school trip in year 10, but then, you know, that sort of just was where next? And it does. It's like there is a whole other world out here. I'm a part of something so much bigger. And then exactly when you come home, like you don't even see your own life in the same way because you've seen outside of the little dot on the map, and you can't undo that ever. I think it's something that just continues to open, and it's such a valuable experience.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, what I wanted to say, what you sharing that brought up with me is like, oh yeah, I also, 19, my grandmother paid for a trip for me to go to Costa Rica for 10 days, and it was a soccer trip, and it did transform my life. And so it's like a trip, like allowing your child, your teen, to go explore in another country, it's a priceless experience to be able to have. It's an education like no other in terms of what it does to the brain, in terms of, oh, that there's people in the world that they live this way. Maybe, you know, I remember when I studied abroad in Chile, it's like, oh, we don't have a dryer. Okay, what is that like to not live with a dryer? I have to turn on the water heater every time I want to take a shower. Like, what's that like? Like, all these things that we take for granted, like, that might seem simple or silly, but it's like growing up, how I grew up, that was something I just took for granted. I had no idea that there was another way of doing things. And I think in terms of, if we want to create a new world, a different way of being, we have to be able to expand our minds beyond the boxes that we know. And for me, that's what started it. I can look back and remember, like, I'm going to travel someplace new every year. That stopped once I like started in graduate school, but it fed me like nothing else fed me in school or anything else. It was just the richest experience. And so, yeah, I look back and that reminded me, like, I'm so grateful for that first experience, because that was really the seed that started, you know, I don't think I wouldn't be living here in Mexico if I never had that experience to venture out into another country at a young age and to see like what it did to me, what it opened up, what I experienced and how I felt. And so, yeah, I think it's like you're full circle in terms of creating an experience for other kids that you had, right? And that was so transformative for you. And now you are doing that for others, and especially at a time where maybe people don't know what to do. Like we touched upon the anxiety and the mental health challenges that teens are having, especially right now. But it's like, how, you know, is the therapy cutting it? Is it, you know, the tools, like staying in your same environment, are those cutting it? Or what happens when we take them out of your environment and allow them to go through that detox and to reconsider the reality by being in something completely different, both the country, you know, if they're camping, they're with people their age without devices. It's like, you know, we just shared how travel, international travel, transformed our lives. And so I'm excited for you and starting these camps and to see what impact it's going to have on kids, because it's really needed. And so I just got goosebumps because, kids need something like this. And so thank you for doing it. Thank you for sharing. And yeah, thank you for creating the things that you're creating, because you've impacted my family and my daughter specifically, who didn't feel like she had community. And then she started your first theater camp. And now she's 8 productions in, and she's 7 or 8. I don't know where we're at now, but it's transformed her experience and her confidence. So thank you.
You're welcome. It's my great joy and pleasure.
Well, Kirsten, thank you so much for everything you shared. We're going to share links in our show notes for everyone or anyone who's interested in learning more about your work within Mexico, if they're in the area, and also your adventure camps coming up starting next year, if they have a teen that they would like to send for an incredible adventure of transformation. And, you know, who knows what that could open the door for. So, Kirsten, thank you so much for everything you shared.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll join you in the next episode. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to your favorite podcast platform or to our YouTube channel so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. To learn more about today's guest and view all the resources mentioned in this episode, visit our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and head to the episode page for this conversation. You can go directly there by clicking the link in the show notes wherever you are listening or watching this. Here on our website, you can also leave your questions, comments, or feedback so we can create more episodes that you love. And if you'd like to be a guest to share your own awakening journey with our listeners, or you have a business or offering that supports others going through their awakenings, head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and click on Be a Guest, and we'll be in touch. Until next time, take care.